balls and his tacky stuff. And I breathed, you know, RNA drops all over that office.
Yes, that probably did something there.
That's what toppled him.
Yeah, that would have been July 24th. Brendan was born at 10:22, July 24th, and it says here, the gallery is saying, Connie on Echo is reggae. And then, Ford is so accessible, he will come and smoke crack at your house party.
That's transparency. That's accountability.
Yes. So Dave Neufeld writes, a spiritual gift to the Protestant masses. Well put, Bob. That's a sophisticated critic there. Anyways, it's quite a performance happening here. I had some homework for the people, but looks like it's not happening for a minute or two. So that's pretty good, Brendan. Very good. I mean, I was right. I knew you had those intimate images. You had to have those scenes. You'll never forget him doing that. It's forever burnt in your mind, him, you know, thrusting his cheap sunglass face at you.
Exactly right, you know.
But wasn't that Zappa song incredible? Have you ever heard anything of
that? That was
amazing?
That was a great song.
Yeah.
That was really good.
And
those horns are just amazing.
Yeah, and we saw that song three times in the spring of '88 because we went to three concerts that in that period when he first started his tour. Sue was at one of them. Sue would have seen that song. Do you remember seeing that, Sue? Yes, in New York at the Beacon Theater. And what happens, Brendan? Well, you know, when the horns come in, the dramatic part. That's when the guitars, the Led Zeppelin guitars, take off. Well, Frank and his other guitarists start walking towards the front and get in position to start doing the big guitar solo, and they strike the chord, but all of a sudden you hear horns, and the horns take off. The great effect. And but when you're in a live concert with perfect acoustics, and Frank does that, it's just like a UFO. That's the closest to an acoustic UFO you could ever experience. It's
and when
so
you can
huge.
See Bob doing air guitar beside you, that's even better.
That's right. And I'm floating, I'm levitating as I'm air guitaring, as I get lifted by the music.
Yeah.
But you have to realize that it's so huge that no critics, they can't categorize Frank. They don't know what to do with them, and no critic can write about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, let's just sort of
go ahead. I gotta go to bed. I'm sorry about this, but I gotta go work for the taxpayers tomorrow.
Why? So. Where are you? Why you gonna work right now?
No, I'm gonna go to sleep for a little bit and then.
Right, you're under.
I'm gonna wake up and go. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're just gonna go back to our normal lives and sort of start getting depressed again. It was an exciting. half hour with you, Brendan. Thanks. You're a spiritual gift to the Buddhist masses there, Brendan. See, this is all playing up. I was told in May 1971 by a psychic in Austin, Texas, that I would be a spiritual gift to the masses, Brendan. What do you think of that?
He's pretty bang on there.
Yes, I should tell everybody, Brendan's the one who filmed me in 2012, where I'd look transformed from the RNA drops upstairs. Brendan's the one who did it. And Sue's asking the questions on the sideline. So you're part of my PR team. You've created some of the archive.
Well, that was kind of the first interview I ever did with somebody. And then after that, I just moved on to interviewing the mayor and shooting on the same camera, you know, all the mayor stuff. So
see?
Kind of funny because I just got
that camera. Here. It started here. The fucking disruption of Toronto started here. And I should say, not Sue.
No, it started 40 years ago, Bob.
That's right. And so, Sue, you asked some of the questions, but Brendan asked some of the questions. They were good questions. Like,
He started it out, but he ran out of steam. He didn't know what to ask you.
Yeah, he's young. They don't have much experience, so they don't know any human things. He's got too many bodies.
Bob,
he can't retrieve it.
With a god. When you're face to face with a god, you can run out of steam.
Right, but it's also because he's got so many bodies, he can't remember any pedestrian chemical
That's
body
true.
Details.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, Brendan, in that promo, the one Ken made, the documentary, there's another shot of you. You're quite tall, and you're hovering over all the little short, fat people, Ford Nation dwarfs, and you're tall, and you're just looking down at all these dwarfs, all these midgets swirling around Mr. Ford.
Yeah, so the interesting part about that shot was that somebody had thrown a drink at the mayor right when that happened. And it freaked the whole administration out. They said, oh, well, what if it had been acid? And, you know, we got to... So on the video, you can't see it, but the mayor takes off... On the video, you can see it, but we had to edit it out because the mayor didn't want to put it in the video. But originally, we had footage of the mayor running after the girl who threw this cup at her and calling the police over and having her arrested. But, you know,
that happened.
The mayor didn't want that to get in the video. Yeah, he caught her.
But he caught her, and she got arrested.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he didn't press charges in the end because it probably just hurt his...
Well, in the picture of you standing over the crowd, you're looking down. You might have been looking at the spilled thing or something. You're looking down, and he's lost in the crowd. Would it be that moment?
Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly that moment.
Yeah. I study these things very closely if I know somebody in them.
Yeah.
And you know, the other video, Bob, that I was just watching the other day, when Rob Ford is in the council chambers and he takes off and he starts running around.
I saw that.
The council, and he bumps into that councilwoman in the green jacket. And he topples her over. Well, Brendan's standing right there. He goes to grab her too.
But Ford was pretty good. He grabbed her and saved her from going over. He was very considerate.
Yeah.
But he didn't even look at her. He didn't even look at her.
He just lifted her back up and then went on his mission.
Yeah.
Because Doug was getting into a fight on the other side, and that's why the mayor was running over there.
It's just like Empire, Boardwalk Empire. There was another great series. These two, Al Capone and his brother, are always getting in scuffles in the saloons and that. This is what it was. You had these two Capone mafia guys, you know, hijacking the council, and all the council, all these nerds are all afraid of them. You know, they're all standing back. And Doug's attacking several over in the other corner off camera.
They're like thugs. They were like thugs that day.
Yeah, yeah. They were like animals, caged animals.
I just wanted to butt in and let you know that Matthew's on the phone, I think.
On the phone? Oh, yeah, I thought he'd come here in person. I thought Matthew would come in person, the fucking cheapy. He's on the phone. Okay. That was one of my finest abstract jokes. Okay, so if you have to go, Brendan... can, and thank you very much for providing one of my funniest moments so far for the crowd, and awesome, and beautiful music.
Well, you know, in the words of the mayor, he'd say, all the best to you.
All the best to you.
Yeah, he says that to everybody. All the best to you. All the best. All right. So have a good time, and good luck in your final hours.
Yes, and don't forget, Brendan, you'll be being called in for duty at different performances, espionage, whatever, you know. You're a member of Club.
Yeah, whenever you want. Just give me a call. If you have an issue, any questions, anything, just give me a call for sure.
It's like when Al Haig was Secretary of State, his real loyalties were to the Knights of Malta. Well, that's it. You maybe work for the Canadian government, but your real loyalties are to the Club 22, so remember that.
Absolutely, absolutely. Come on, of course.
All right.
have a good night.
Good night, Brendan.
Yay!
Okay, now we have Matthew. We're just going from one celebrity to the next. How you doing, Matthew?
I'm good, Bob. It's been pretty amazing. You know, you talked about Al Capone and you talked about Mayor Ford, and I got both those guys in my new song I just wrote.
Really? You wrote a song while we were talking, or you wrote it before?
I spent last night, like around 10 o'clock last night, till about like 2 this afternoon putting a song together, and then I just finished it like this afternoon. So, but it's got Mayor Ford in it and Al Capone. I'm making references to him.
There's my synchronicity, tuning into the creativity around me, right?
Yeah.
Matthew sent us the song.
Oh, Matthew sent us the song to upload. I asked Bill if he could do it, so check out your email. Matthew wants to play it at some point during his interview.
Right, so we would hit the list one, then list four, and it should be at the bottom. No, it's not.
And I don't know if Bill has gotten to it.
Oh, okay. So, Matthew, so you've been listening to what's been going on the past hour here.
Yeah, I have. I thought it was pretty cool. Yeah, I've been listening on and off for a while, and I got the email when Ion came on earlier, and that blew my mind. That was the coolest thing ever to me.
What was? What email?
Oh, I got the email, the mass email from Carol about Ion.
Oh, yeah. The other day or today?
That was today. Sabrina came right up and said, "Hey, Carolyn said Ion's on right now." And so I tuned in again and I heard Ion. I thought, "Oh, this is awesome! You resurrected Ion for Bobfest."
Well, the subtle point is Michael Brown did it. Did you hear 2 days ago how he can claim that?
No, I didn't. I didn't hear that. I missed that part.
He said the last time. He said when he used to be on.
Bob was interviewing Michael Brown.
Right, and he told us that he stayed in the last spring before he disappeared. He would come in every week because he knew that he was going to be on when Ion showed up. And so he just kept coming and trying to be there so Ion could happen, and then he ran out of patience, and then he disappeared. Then he comes back, and he's on the radio 2 days ago, and Ion shows up fulfilling his prophecy.
Oh, okay. Yep, I get it.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
That's really good, yeah. Yeah, well, I got an announcement to make for your... somebody had said it a couple hours ago. I don't remember who that was, but they said, "Is there any holiday specials for the RNA drops?" And so I thought, well, we don't really have any specials per se, but we do have a promotion for Bobfest, and the shopping cart, the code is Bob, and what happens is if you order a Rebob, you can get your choice of a copy of my book or a copy of the Ionic Sessions card deck with no extra charge. So all you have to do is buy a Rebob between now and the end of this month, and then you put Bob in the shopping cart, and then you will get either one of your choice. Just put it in the comments section in the cart, whichever
Wow.
one you prefer.
And you're announcing that for the first time right now.
First time right now. It starts right now.
I was thinking, you want to hear something interesting? No, do you want to be interviewed? Are you going to interview me? Do we have anything to share?
Well, you're the better interviewer.
Right. Here's the guy singing Stairway to Heaven, Ike Willis, okay? I talked with him a couple of weeks ago and recorded it. And it's so good we haven't released it yet, but I could stick it in here because it's a needle in a haystack. But what it is, I'm explaining Zappa's amazing final media project to Ike Willis, who was hanging around Frank for 10 years. He was his main buddy. He would go up to the studio, to his home every day, and they'd scheme and plan, you know, various projects. And this one I read to him, I don't want to say too much about it, but he did not know about it. All right? But then,
okay,
when he hears about it, what do you think of this? You want to hear this?
Yeah, I do.
Is that interesting? You want to hear a guy who co-created this thing but didn't know what it was until I read it to him.
Yeah, I do. I want to know because I think that I'm going to dub myself the Frank Zappa of marketing pretty soon, so I want to know more about it.
Yes, you could. Or how about Captain Beefheart? Or you? I don't know. What do you think, Captain Beefheart?
Captain Beefheart. I like Captain Beefheart. Yeah.
Because you know what he did? He did no marketing. That was his failure. He couldn't do marketing.
You know? I'm working.
Yeah. You could say I'm the Captain Beefheart of marketing.
No. You want to be the Frank Zappa? Captain Beefheart. No. No.
Okay.
I mean, I like Captain Beefheart, but he just shot himself in the foot every time he took a step.
Yeah, Zappa was a genius at marketing. He certainly was. So I will have to, let's see, I'll have to go sleep for a while so I can get my brain thinking properly. Then I'll find where it is. Okay, just joking. Let me see. So I got to go over to the Ike Willis section. Ike Willis, hit documents. There it is. Hit Ike Willis. July 14th, so it was several weeks ago, 2013, and I think I can just click it on. Sound is in position. No, it isn't. Put that there like that. And this should work. No, I don't want to do it that way. That's the iTunes way. We want to do it this way, QuickTime. There it is. Okay, sounds perfect. Volume's up.
The 1920s. You probably think.
Okay, I'm gonna rewind it. That's the start. Wait a minute.
Primitivism, constructivism, Dada, surrealism, all these arts. We think back, it seems the eye.
Okay, that's the iTunes. I don't want to use that one. I'm going to use the QuickTime. Okay? And it started already. So here we go. These are my opening remarks to Ike.
Okay, this is Ike Willis and Bob Dobbs, July 14, 2013. Okay, Ike.
Yes, Bob.
If you think of the exciting avant-garde imagery and arts of the 1920s, you probably think of painting, cubism, suprematism, constructivism, Dada, surrealism, all these arts. We think back, it seems the eye seems to dominate in our thinking back to the 20s and 30s, or even the teens. When you come to the 60s, 50s, 60s, 70s, what is exciting and avant-garde and an enthralling novelty? It's obviously music, right?
That's probably the age of the ear.
Yeah,
definitely.
Exactly. Now, you have painting is the eye, music is the ear. Those are two senses. What senses would come next?
Probably the brain.
Very good. And that's the...
Probably the brain, because that seems to be... What seems to be happening here in the 21st century, especially the fact that I think that at least in the world and in terms of what we're talking about, there seems to be, right now in this country, there seems to be just a whole shitload of people who are, well, look, in America, they're still trying to get rid of racial prejudice. They're not having a good success with it. They're trying to get rid of. Basically, we're trying to climb our way out of all the mistakes of the last millennium. You know, in terms of wars, genocides, slavery. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And at the same time, art and music. And things like that. And the thing is, all right, it's like this Trayvon Martin case. That's a great example of that. And it has everything to do with race, and it's the biggest elephant in the room, and nobody said a damn thing about it.
Okay.
And it's like we're trying to get out of the whole point is the only way to get to climb out of it. And the first thing to do. And then Frank would say this too. The main thing is, it's like, well, the only reason that there's still trouble between, you know, racism and stuff between white people and black people is that they're approaching it from the wrong perspective. Nobody's asking the right question. It's like, well, the solution is very simple. The only way that white people and black people are going to start getting along and racism stops is that. You have to start from the right premise. And the premise is, white people don't consider black people people. See, and that, they're starting it, they don't consider us people, like human beings.
Right.
And, you know, we're not people to them.
Okay,
so,
Ike, now, I want to bring in how I see Frank in the big picture in this scenario I've laid out. You're right to say the brain. What sense is the brain? Well, I like McLuhan's definition. It's the tactile sense. If you think of the tactile sense, it's not the sense of touch. It's the interplay. It's the rhythm. It's the thing that coordinates the different sensory data. So television was an extension of tactility. Not the eye, not the ear, but all the senses.
Right.
Because for many people with television, they could smell it as they watched the pictures. And it moves, so you got kinetics in there.
Exactly, exactly.
Now, America...
And the brain processes...
What?
The process... Oh, the brain has the process since then, since development of television, and then media to put on it. It's the brain that has to interpret all that stuff.
Okay. So here you have the eye beginning in the 20th century as radio, TV, and these electrical
right.
extensions of
right.
the mind.
Right.
Tactile
right.
media are the hidden ground. But because we
right.
were illiterate, visually biased society in the 19th century based on books, we were seeing the dying of our external senses, the eye and ear. So the first death was the supernova of the eye through art.
Oh.
Right?
Okay, I get that.
And then we have the supernova of the ear in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
So the supernova of the last 20 or 30 years is interactivity or tactile interplay.
Okay, yeah. That's
everybody right. dancing with any media form that shows up, and it the environments of it through the your iPhones and that shrinking the media more and more so that you get empowered to edit it.
That's true, because with the advent of computers and the internet and TV and visuals. Okay, I gotcha, yeah.
All right, so in that mix, Frank starts as a kid drawing. I think he used to put on puppetry, and he used to draw more than music.
Right, exactly.
Right. So he starts off acting out the 40s and 50s. He's got his eyes going. Then his ears get activated when he's 14. He starts composing, and he develops the interest in the ear culture.
Mm-hmm.
But he's always looking at it visually. He's drawing. He likes drawing, musical
yeah.
notes and that. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The next, so that's the 50s, 60s, 70s. So when the Sinclair Veer comes in, there's Frank. He starts digitizing his music and developing the tactility that was always in his music. So here's how it's tactile. Tactility is the interplay of the senses, not any particular sense in itself. You could say it's like the mind that organizes physical sensory data. So this interactivity of the tactile sense is touch, kinetic contact, and then letting go. Touch, let go. Touch, let go. Sex is a good example of a tactile operation. All the senses involved, and if you're doing it right, it's kind of a interactive, sensitive call and response situation. Now, Frank comes in very quickly in the late 60s, holding up his hand. That's what tactility is, the extension of the hand. He's using
right.
hand signals, so he's implying tactility, not that he would come up with that term, but he's acting it out as a person, an artist, in touch with the rhythms of the present. And what does he play with? Rhythms. He creates
right.
a tactile, look at Lumpy Gravy. It's tactile interplay with speech and sound and cliches from the media landscape, in an interplay that, for most people, still visually limited, visually biased, acoustically biased, find chaotic.
That's certainly true. That
right.
is very, very true.
So
the main question that I always get from people is that how on earth I can do that.
Right, right. You see, that's why you're going to be able to fill in what I'm talking about here. So then just to finish it up here, once the digital comes in, since Frank was always miming tactile interplay with his audience, with the interviews, with the mediascape, he was a very interactive artist. You know what I mean? The audience and his response to the audience was more what Frank was about than any of the particular operations, any of the
exactly.
particular technical stuff he was doing.
Exactly,
he was
exactly.
always watching to see what was going on. He wasn't presenting
right.
a package.
And what was going to be the result of whatever small input that he added to it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so this tactile interplay with the Sinclair Veer in his digital studio, and remember, he's always showing his hand in a lot of the album covers.
Yep.
The big hand coming in, the image of tactility. So,
very good, Bob. now thinking back, yep. That's very true.
Yeah. So when the digital comes in, I call that the Android meme. That's where technology comes alive. That's what we've actually listened. We've watched the last 30 years where people's physical chemical bodies have been sidelined as they watch this digital supernova of incredible technology just swamp over themselves and the economy. And Frank stays on top of it. He immediately in the 80s, right when it starts to become popular, he gets his digital instrument and he starts massaging anything, anytime, anywhere for no reason at all.
Right.
That is the definition of tactility. Tactility doesn't have a purpose. It's a sculpting. And the sculpture of tactility is what he and Don brought to pop music. The sculpture
right.
dynamic, which is the art version of tactility. So you have this incredible interactivity of Frank digitally, and remember, wasn't it called Intercontinental Absurdities?
Right, exactly.
Programming the whole world as an art form. You know, I call him a satellite conductor, operating from the satellite level, conducting the whole world. And
well,
I want, okay, so I'm saying that Frank wasn't a musician sound guy, he wasn't an eye guy, he wasn't a dance guy, he incorporated those elements, he was a tactile artist.
And right, this that makes very good sense.
Yeah, this explains a lot of the details. So now, to end my point, let's go to the play. The opera, he never got off the ground, Dio Fa, because if you read his plan for that, it's such an amazing tactile enterprise.
I've never heard of that.
You never heard
Explain.
Of Dio Fa?
No.
Okay, well, let me just read the entry on killuglyradio.com, give them a plug, you know, the website. In the real Frank Zappa book, Zappa describes a proposal for a World Cup football opera. And this is
a
like...
what? Say that again.
A World Cup football opera.
Really?
Yeah, called Dio, God, Fa,
right.
Lies. God Lies. And it's in the chapter...
God Lies?
Yeah, that's the title, Dio Fa.
You're kidding.
Yeah. Now remember, he's being big. He's going to take on God in this tactile environmental situation.
Right.
All right, so Dio Fa.
Wow.
Yeah. So this is in chapter 18 called the failure chapter. This is what...
Really?
Yeah, so here's what it says. Frank Zappa would have proposed, if he'd given them the support, to write, produce, and direct a special entertainment event for the conclusion of the World Cup football finals in the summer of 1990. In other words, like the Super Bowl halftime show, he was going to be the end of the World Cup finals where everybody's going nuts, whoever won, and be the show
God,
for
it. Are you kidding me? That's insane.
Listen to this. And it would be
when, when did he come up with that? Hold on a second, Bob. I'm on the other line. Bob, on this Hawaii, I'm doing a thing for the interview. I'll call you back. All right, honey. Bye. That was Denise. All right. Wait. Now, when did he do this?
This was scheduled for 1990, so he was thinking of it in the late 80s.
Oh my God. That must have been what we were gearing up for at the time he got sick.
Yeah.
At the time he really, really started getting sick.
In 89. He had this ready to go after... It was almost like he didn't mind the tour, 88 tour stopped. He had a big project coming up anyways.
That's what he was talking about. And we never got to it because, you know, he got sick.
Secretly got sick. No one knew in 89, but he told you.
Well, I did, and then that's when we moved to Portland. And then after I moved to Portland, that's when he called me and told me he was terminal. Okay.
Right.
And because we stayed in touch during all that time, and he was having plans about, that's what he meant by, because we were going to get back together, and it was going to dovetail with the 25th year anniversary of 200 Motels, and we were going to get the orchestra, the London Symphony again, and Flo and Eddie and Vinny and
all right.
for this big worldwide production.
Which he didn't tell you all the details. So let me give you the details.
No, well, we never got to all the details.
Yeah, because he got involved with Russia in 89 and 90.
Right, and also Czechoslovakia with
yes.
Bob Powell and those guys.
Right, so listen to what he proposed. He proposed that this thing be financed by the City of Milan and the Italian Football Committee. It would have been,
right.
I'm just reading from the text here, it would have been an opera with the premiere performance in La Scala, broadcast
right.
by... You tell me when you remember things. Like, oh, he said, like, you know, did you hear that word come up at some point in the conversation?
Right.
in La Scala, broadcast via satellite worldwide, okay?
Oh, my God.
So, look, the idea was to produce a script in English, Italian, German, French, Spanish, Portuguese, and Russian. The, the performance would include dancing in many styles, many special effects, and a fashion show in the opera.
Wow.
So, listen to this. It gets even better. The musical accompaniment would include full orchestral settings, chamber music settings, ethnic choral instrumental settings, executed by digital sampling and digital tape playback,
right,
advanced electronic music techniques, and rock music in styles ranging from doo-wop vocals to heavy metal. In other words, his whole career, his whole big note is what
pretty
he was going to
do. Pretty much, yeah.
The music would be partly acoustic, partly amplified, and in some instances, mimed to digital playback. See, acoustic,
right,
you know, acoustic would be the folky painting period, the eye period.
Yes,
and then
the
60s. Yeah, and then the amplification is the 60s and 70s. You know, that's the new amplifier.
Right,
that's the ear part, the ear buzz.
Right.
And then the third phase, the tactile, is the digital playback. You mime to digital playback.
Right.
Interactive,
right,
digital involvement. So it says Frank was to write the story and lyrics, supervise the set design, costumes, and special effects. The city of Milan, through its sister city arrangement with Chicago, would engage the Chicago Symphony to provide the orchestral backing. The
right.
La Scala Orchestra would be represented by selected instrumental solos. So you have some people from the La Scala Orchestra. The La Scala Chorus would be also featured. Zappa was to select the stage director, the orchestral conductor, and the featured vocal soloist. The negotiations for their fees would be the responsibility of the city of Milan. Their fees were not included in the proposal or budget. He has here a U.S. designer and staging company would be selected by Zappa to prepare the blueprints for the sets and special effects. The sets would be constructed in Milan in the La Scala Scenic Facility under the supervision of the U.S. designer. The special effects would be constructed in the United States and shipped to Milan. Now comes a part that's italicized, and this is the story. Okay, this is the deal file. This is what it says.
All right.
What follows is not a complete description of the event, only a collection of ideas to begin with. All material is subject to irrational modification. Now, irrational modification is what tactility is. It sculpts the sensory data coming into the mind and sorts it according to whatever mysterious wills and agencies we have in ourselves, right? Our
right.
conscious
right.
upfront. So right there, material is subject to irrational modification. Yes, tactility is not running. It's doing it for any reason or whatever that it knows. It's following its rules. All right? So there it is. He's saying
right.
it's a tactile response to a collection of basically just a bunch of ideas to begin with. All right. The theme of the opera is, quote, millions of people believe football is God. But it is but it is said, at least in Torino, God is a liar. That's the quote. Dio fa.
Dio fa.
To present this theme, we propose to use a large mechanical version of the marionette character shown in the logo of the Italian Football Committee. And that would be the football god. So he
right.
took the actual logo of the organization, and that
right.
would be the football god. This football god marionette. So there's Zappa getting his puppetry in there, always you
right.
know, his kid stuff. This football god marionette is afflicted with an uncontrollable nasal growth syndrome.
Oh no!
That's Reuben the Jet, 1968.
Oh my God. Conceptual continuity
yes.
strikes again.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Continue.
All right. And this would be pioneered by Pinocchio and perfected by Reagan. The nasal growth syndrome would be pioneered by Pinocchio.
Wait. Started by Pinocchio and what's the next
Well, he has
say?
Here, maybe it's the football god. This football god, marionette, is afflicted with an uncontrollable nasal growth syndrome, comma,
right.
pioneered by Pinocchio, perfected by Reagan, Ronald Reagan.
Okay, there you go.
All right.
The lie.
Right. Because whenever football god tells a lie, a horrible soft nose grows out of the soccer ball.
Right.
Which forms the head of the logo. With each new lie, another monk appears singing in Sardinian ethnic choral style, struggling to hold up the football god's repulsive nose with inexplicable religious machinery.
Oh my God.
So the nose, so that's the Pinocchio part. So the football
right.
god is Pinocchio at the beginning. To conclude the production in a way that allows football god to have a tiny nose and live happily ever after, we propose, is what the proposal is. As soon as the Italian national team is selected, a rock video is made in the style of the Super Bowl shuffle. Remember the shuffle and
oh, of course, Cletus the Chicago Arredis? Bears, yes.
No, the Cletus Arredis Arredis.
Oh, Cletus Arredis Arredis, okay, yeah.
Yeah, they perform a shuffle at the end of the story. Okay.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, a rock video is made in the style of the Super Bowl shuffle using the players in uniform to render an Anglo-Italian rap version of Michael Jackson's I'm Bad. So that's...
Oh, no. Oh, no.
So the rock video is made as soon as the team is selected. All right. This will be made into an instant hit. Okay, this is part of the opera. You'll make it an instant... I think he means all within the evening's performance. This will be made into an instant...
Of course, because it would be such that such an event would already be pre-announced worldwide as a result of the World Cup, because that year's World Cup a frenzy that goes on every four years is going to be watched by every country in the world and attended to, and that's going to be announced as that would be announced as a part of the World Cup ceremonies and the World Cup thing, and of course it'll be an instant hit because it would be
because everybody's tactile
that they're going to make their. Right, they're going to make, you're going, and plus it's going to be a video, and, you know, and oh my God, thereby making it an instant hit.
That's right.
So it would be an instant hit simply because of what it is.
That's right. Now, in the global theater, with satellites going around to start in the 60s, all the old media, television, magazines, books, newspapers, radio, TV, bulldozers, oil companies, they're all inside this theatrical thing that's no longer the global village, it's the global theater. And Frank, as a satellite conductor, is orchestrating a day in the life of the global theater. And he's showing
how
collective marketing
is. Okay, and that dovetails with his invention that he was patenting for us to not have to tour, to be presented, to telecast, broadcast, simulcast,
right,
our performances in 3D.
Yes, to avoid
any theater, into any theater or any stage in the world. Now that directly coincides with that. Oh my God!
Yeah, when was he telling you that? By the middle 80s?
88.
Right. Does that include the news show with Daniel Shore idea that he wanted to do?
Yeah.
Yeah, the TV news.
Yeah, I was there when he met Daniel Shore. I was standing right next to him.
Right, right. See, so this is an expansion of it. This is like a climactic one-time thing, and it's a big ad for Frank in the long run for his talk show. So the marketing of this, and everybody be all involved with it, that the whole absurdity would get the world audience who's listening more drunk on the whole thing, and they'd all start saying, yeah, this is an instant hit just for the hell of it. And that's a tactile interplay between the composer, artist, and the audience. See, it's more tactile.
And the music industry and the entertainment industry.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the result of saying, okay, it's going to one of the requirements being that it be an instant hit will involve the music industry and its machinery as a response, as a call response.
That's right.
Tacticity wise, making the media entertainment machine.
A subset of the satellite conducting.
A subset of the satellite conducting, making it an instant hit.
Yeah.
The process of it being an instant hit is also a part of the a part of him conducting.
Yes.
Holy shit.
and think of Theodore Bikel, the guy with the military suit.
Oh, Theo Bikel. I love Theo Bikel. Yes.
Remember him at 200 Motels? He's the military guy behind the scene playing with the dummy.
Right, Frank. Rance Mohanitz.
Well,
Rance Mohanitz.
Yes. Frank is Rance Mohanitz in this situation.
Right.
Right? Orchestrating this whole global military operation. So
right.
It says, so this video is made an instant hit by all Italian radio and television stations. At the end of the opera, Football God sings his hit, assisted by by the monks, who turn out to be Italian national team in disguise. So he's already brought the Italian national team into it. And so, Frank writes, by singing I'm bad, you know it, God's nose shrivels to Jacksonian proportions, and he dances away. All right, that's the end of that phase.
Wow.
Then he says, Diophile, the logo for the opera itself, as it would appear on posters and advertising, was to be licensed as part of the opera plot, and still part of the story, to a mysterious Soviet clothing designer. Here's his whole thing of helping Russia. You know what I mean? Then he got
right.
It'd be licensed to a mysterious Soviet clothing designer who plans to unveil the new line of Soviet fashions via satellite during the most dramatic part of the opera.
Right.
So this marketing is going to interrupt the opera.
Right.
As part of the opera. And it
said, a commercial.
Yes. And so it says that FC would attempt to make an actual licensing and manufacturing deal with the Soviets for real clothes to be offered worldwide under the Diophile label, with the garments making their debut as part of a choreographed fashion show with ballet and ethnic dancers as models, and the Soviet designer appearing on stage to be hugged by them after the clothing is shown. So he's going to do a marketing thing right in the middle of the plot.
As a part of the plot.
Yeah, as a part of the plot.
Oh, my God.
Now, listen to this. Other characters in the Diophile include Galileo.
Right.
Tesla.
Of course.
Newton. Da Vinci. Leonardo da Vinci. Mussolini.
Mussolini.
Hitler. Stalin. And Elvis Presley as the devil.
Ha! Ha, 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 ha. Are you shitting me? What?
This is what's right here. This is what's written. And then it says, Great Britain was to be represented by dancers dressed as football hooligans. So actually he's getting the Pope Catholics against the Protestant Queen in here.
Of course.
Great Britain was to be represented by dancers dressed as football hooligans, misinterpreting signals from the Queen. And the Queen is a waving mechanical cardboard arm viewed through the window of a passing car. So the cardboard arm waving at the Queen. And they're misinterpreting the hand signals, Zappa's conducting style.
Right.
As a political operation. You know, people thought in the conspiracy websites over the last 10, 15 years, they talk about, you know, George Bush comes out and he makes little signals to his Freemasonic buddies through the media with the color of his tie and all that. Well, this is when Frank is sort of bringing in that idea that the Queen is orchestrating her empire with this waving hand. You know what I mean? This mechanical hand.
Exactly. Which is basically all anybody ever sees of the Queen.
That's right.
She's riding by in her car.
Okay. Here's the final paragraph. America was, so you got Italy, Great Britain, and then America, which is a very tactile culture with so much electric media interplaying its tactility itself. So it's in between the Protestants, the Catholics, so to speak, and their empires. America was to be represented by a group of tourists who line up the phone booth with the sign on it that reads, "Talk to God."
Right.
Each tourist would get to ask a single question. The all-important questions are, one, did I wake you up? To God, you'd ask God.
Right.
Two, what time is it there? There's the question.
Right.
Frank, I always wanted to know what time it was. Three, how much is that in dollars?
Right. Oh, no. Oh, my God.
Fourth question, asking God, is that a castle or what?
That's amazing.
Yeah. Fifth question, what's the weather like there?
Exactly.
Sixth and final question, and each caller gets to ask one of these, right? They get to choose from these six. And the final one is, when are you coming to America?
Right. Oh, man. That's fucking brilliant.
Yes.
Oh, my God. That's what he was talking about.
That's what he wanted to do. That'd be the final. You know, think of the football. They talk about the political football. An issue is a political football. It's a problem, you know. You kick it around.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, to me, that is a perfect expression of the tactile interplay of all the media environments orchestrated by, quote, the CIA, whoever manages the secret committee that has to sort of keep the big picture going and kill a few people if they get in the way or kill a few nations. That is what he's miming. And it begins with Elvis. See, whoever is a big major stream star like Michael Jackson or Elvis, they are miming in the popular tactile level the role of the CIA orchestration of what I call the word that makes the market.
Wow.
Isn't that incredible? He has it all here.
Oh, my goodness. That's what he was Okay, I got
What do you recall? Now, what are some things you recall that fit
bits,
in?
Well, bits and pieces, the every aspect of the play are the things that he was in the process of actually doing, because, and I think part of that was going to be the Thingfish movie.
Right.
Because
right.
when he was on his deathbed, he was in negotiations with Whoopi Goldberg, who wanted to buy the rights to put on Thingfish as a movie.
She wanted to do
as
that.
Well, yeah. With because Whoopi loved the album and since we weren't able to get it staged on Broadway as a play.
Right.
And think about what happens in Thingfish, right?
Yeah.
And all of that, so that dovetails with because we're doing a lot of hand signals and because the Mammy Nuns were the chorus line. You hear me?
Yeah, exactly. Yes, I know
the
what you
Mammy
mean.
The Mammy Nuns were the chorus line because they were going to be dancing all the way through the play.
Right. So you see, Thingfish is puny compared to this thing.
Yeah, I know, but see, Thingfish was just one part of.
Yes,
it's the same thing. It was like the.
It was about the marketing of the biological virus known as AIDS, whereas Frank and this deal file is showing the larger marketing globally.
Okay, and that was just Oh my God.
Yeah, he's showing the seamless web of corporations and media and intelligence agencies and news agencies and the information environment. He's showing a seamless web around one event that is meant to trigger off all other kinds of marketing things.
Right. Right.
And he's miming that. And he's saying, let me be that. I will take my reality and do it. And show everybody this. Now,
hey, Bob, I think my handheld phone is about to die. Let me hang this one up and we have to do part two.
I will stop the recording and we'll do it again. I'll call the other number.
All right, I'll pick up the other phone and so that I can reach put this one on the charger, and I'll have the other when you call back. I'll have the other phone ready to go.
All right. Well, actually, so you have to just see you can. All right. Let's just stop the recording and we'll do part two.
Yeah.
I'll stop this. Okay. Just a second.
All right. Go.
Okay, this is part B of our talk with Ike on July 14th, 2013. So, Ike, you just had your mind blown with this scenario. What comes to mind? What ideas and things you're familiar with?
Well, like I was saying, this what brings to mind is that 6 to 8 months before Frank died, he called me while I was still living in Portland. And said that this was in early '93, and told me that he was coming. It seems like his cancer was going into remission, and we'd be able to travel again and actually go back on the road. And he was throwing bits and pieces at me. Now I realize now of Dio Fa, because he had always been saying that. Well, I want to go back out with the orchestra, and essentially have a huge orchestra / band doing a worldwide presentation that would ostensibly be the 25th year anniversary of 200 Motels, but combined with this new technology that he had just secured a patent search for with the Library of Congress, utilizing 3D technology, so that instead of having to tour from city to city, we could put the whole thing in a sound stage, at least our part of it, because this is also part of the president, is his running for president as well.
Right.
That we'd have the symphony orchestra, we'd have an expanded version of the Mothers, and to be able to use this technology to be able to, and it was totally interactive in that we could set, We would set up the whole, we'd set up the whole machinery in a movie soundstage and then be able to broadcast it, simulcast via television and computer and internet into any venue in any city in the world and adjust the size of the broadcast. Naturally, it's like on a, if it was on watching on a TV, we'd be in the size of a TV screen. But in a theater, because of 3D technology, it would be the same size as the band would be on a 40 by 29 foot stage.
Wow. So like, in other words, you wouldn't go to City City broadcast from this place.
We'd be at home here in L.A.
Right.
Being televised by 3D technology, so that if it's a small 200, 500 seater, you know, an old theater or a stadium, we could adjust the size of the broadcast of the projection, so that it would be, you know, we'd be the regulars of the size a band would be on a stage in a football stadium. A football stadium, Bob.
Yeah, he would be saying that to you.
A football stadium, okay? And that's the thing, because that's the thing. So now that makes perfect sense, because that would allow TOFA to actually happen.
Yes.
Because during the World Cup, using that technology, he'd be able to conduct and also we'd be able to participate in such a worldwide football game, fashion show,
merchandising,
and oh my God.
Let me give you a couple of conceptual continuities. When he was talking about running for president, he said he would just do interviews. He would just stay home and be available for interviews 24/7 and just run it from his home, talk and be interviewed. So there's the work coming, digitally just coming from one place. You understood?
Yes.
McCloone used to say that's the way elections should have been run. Everybody could run the whole thing in the fucking studio, you know, over 6 months or a year and get rid of all this other physical body interaction that's stupid. That leads to whatever, stupid stuff. So,
Going around with handshaking and kissing babies and et cetera, et cetera.
And they would just dialogue casually and show their ability to respond to whatever was happening in the news. And that's how you'd figure out whether the guy was going to be a good president or not. Not trying to state some stupid opinion or policy.
Exactly. Now, based on polls, based on polling, and based on just political footballs and buzzwords and et cetera, et cetera.
Right. So Frank had the right idea how to do it. Now, here's the other idea. Did you ever see The World's Greatest Sinner by Tim Carey? That movie.
Oh, you mean Frank's movie?
No, Tim Carey.
The one that he did the movie.
Yes.
No, I never saw that movie.
Okay, Tim Carey, who was this great actor for Stanley Kubrick movies, and a good friend of John Cassavetes, used to be in a lot of his movies.
Oh, I love John Cassavetes. Cassavetes is great.
Right. So Tim Carey, he made this in 1963. You know, when Frank is on Steve Allen, he mentions he's playing the bicycle. He mentions the premiere. He says of the worst movie ever made or something like that. Okay.
Right.
Which Tim Carey didn't like, but anyways, he can't control Frank, and he had his reasons for doing that. But the movie's about this, I don't know if he's an insurance salesman or something, but he starts watching the Elvis Presley kind of phenomenon. This is the mid-50s. It's being filmed in the late 50s, early 60s. It takes several years for him to make it. So he takes on this is the movie world of Tim Carey and his friend Jack Nicholson. Jack Nicholson later said it was his favorite movie of all time at the time it got shown in 63. He said, this is my favorite movie. I don't know if he still would say it. But here's Tim with these actors, and they're watching this other kind of showbiz coming out of the radio called rock and roll, right?
Right.
And so Tim Carey, he decides, well, that's the way to get attention. So he becomes a rock and roller. He becomes so popular that he eventually starts a religion and declares war on God or something like that.
Oh, wow.
The world's greatest sinner. And that's the image of Elvis Presley as the devil is from that movie, World's Greatest Sinner.
And by the time by the time Carey creates his own religion.
Now he gets screwed.
Right.
And what happens, he starts going around and ripping off old ladies. He screws all these old, ugly ladies to get their money,
right,
or to invest in all that. So it leads into a terrible corruption. And I can't remember the exact ending, but I think it ends in tears, a tragedy.
But the result, the OFA, God,
yes,
lied.
Yes. So,
wow.
Now,
wow,
when I talked to Frank after, you know, after he transitioned and I was talking to him through the medium, the Evergreens, I said, a lot of your conceptual continuity comes out of the world's greatest sinner, and he agreed, or the guy that was dead agreed. Anyway.
Right, right, right.
So, and you can see it in this movie. Elvis is the devil. Pop culture is the devil. Look at the Pope hates Madonna and all this stuff. And then,
sure, sure.
And then, but then Frank shows how pop culture fits in with all the other corporations and the marketing and everything to seamless web, and he shows it's not a global theater, it's a global membrane. Can we run from a studio? Which is always,
right,
what Frank said. In some studio in Langley, Virginia, they're making
exactly
it.
Exactly, yeah, yeah. Top secret laboratory.
Yeah, and he called his, Dr. Zircon's lab in Happy Valley.
Wow.
Think of Uncle Meat was a guy with a lab. With the,
sure,
with the,
sure,
jets and the nasal growth syndrome, whatever,
exactly,
it was.
Exactly, exactly.
So, the whole thing.
Wow.
So, I recently, a friend of mine saw a... Right. What was it, Nusty Wright? The Philip Glass performance of something, some,
yes,
big opus,
yes,
and it was lousy and boring. And this,
right,
is the point. Frank would be and could think beyond these guys because he didn't have the particularities of values of this is low culture, that's high culture. He put it all in the mix. And,
right,
that's the way society's run today. That's a tactile society.
Wow. The,
each particular media content has no meaning. It's keeping the whole thing going.
Right.
And merging and intertwining and the secret lab orchestrates the whole thing. That's what Frank understood.
Which really hits to the heart of Frank. The one thing that Frank was always really brilliant at is long-term thinking.
Yes. Who are the brain police?
Right, right. Long, just super, super long-term thinking. Holy shit. I mean, and being able to incorporate all of that and juggle all of those balls simultaneously.
And notice, and like you said, he'd have scientific magazines in his studio there. He'd be up on the latest technology. And you're saying that he invented a patent or he wanted to patent the process of putting everything together?
No, it's his idea.
Wow.
It's his idea. I mean, the thing is, using what he knew about the technology, because remember, Frank was a very brilliant guy.
Yeah.
And he was always up to speed
with
all the new tech, what the latest technologies, and every new thing that came out, the manufacturers would always send Frank a prototype so Frank could actually troubleshoot it and beta test. He had the first synthesizers, the first amps, the first the first digital synthesizers, polyphonic synthesizers, the synclav. I mean, he owned the first one.
Yeah.
Of two. Yeah, because we were in the studio doing Thingfish when the synclavier people sent him a couple of synclavs to troubleshoot and to beta test and to get to work the bugs out of it.
Now, did he have other industries sending him other things?
I think so. I mean, because I would be up at the house and I'd see things that I'd never seen before.
Yeah.
He goes and he would say, "Oh yeah, that's a so and so, and they're made by so and so, and it's supposed to do this, this, and this." A lot of the stuff didn't. Some of the stuff didn't work because it didn't go far enough, or
right,
you know what I mean. It didn't do quite everything that it was supposed to do. But you know, the thing is, he still used certain things. But the bottom line, he knew how it worked in terms of technology.
He could understand
and,
it, and he could improvise on it, or make
and
a
he,
patent
but
of
that,
it.
Which is what he would do. He would take the best out of whatever he was testing, report back to these guys and say, okay, well, this works. I don't like this, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Now
right.
This, sorry, it doesn't do what it doesn't go far enough, and it doesn't get the exact results that either you or I aren't looking for.
Right.
You and I are looking for. But keep trying, because all you need to do is this. Why don't you make it do this or that? You know what I mean? And that's how Frank was, because there was always things boxes with tubes and knobs and made by various corporations and stuff, but various companies. But he, you know, as long as I'd always been, I'd go up to the house, we'd either be recording or sitting up there talking or whatever, or be up there late at night working on projects. And the studio and the house was just full of this shit.
Right, and books and stuff, and manuals.
Oh, of course, books everywhere.
Okay, you know, so look, you take that famous play in the 80s, I think it's called Einstein on the Beach, maybe it was the 70s. You see, a play...